Fine, Value Time, Premium Pick, and Marshalls. That's just a partial list. Head to the Food and Drug Administration's website for more. Jill Nato, Fox News.
American Family News is available online at onenewsnow.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download the One News Now mobile app for your Apple or Android device. I'm Rusty Pugh.
Challenges await a Christian ministering to a Muslim friend.
They have no mediator. You still got a holy God, you still got a broken law, and you've got the reality of hell described in even more vivid colors than anything we find in the Bible.
Dr. James White, director of Alpha and Omega Ministries, helps bridge the misunderstanding and lack of communication between Christianity and Islam. Look for the AFA Cultural Institute DVD, Reaching Muslims with the Gospel by Dr. James White, when you visit afastore.net.
It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up, or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The president threatening new sanctions on the regime in Tehran if they continue the crackdown on the uprising. That crackdown, by the way, has already cost more than 20 lives and more than several hundred people have already been arrested. Now, that threat, however, happens as his administration is speaking with a common voice in support of the Iranian people.
It takes great bravery for the Iranian people to use the power of their voice against their government.
From the UN mission to the State Department.
We ought to support them.
To the White House.
The United States supports the Iranian people.
A unified front in support of the Iranian people in the throes of an uprising threatening to topple the rogue regime in Tehran.
Years of mismanagement, corruption, and foreign adventurism have eroded the Iranian people's trust in their leaders. The Iranian regime spends its people's wealth on spreading militancy and terror abroad rather than ensuring prosperity at home.
That was Kevin Cork's report in Fox last night. Sandy Rios with you. And that is certainly a huge issue for the whole world to consider. You know, Europe has been pouring money into Iran, doing business with them, even while we were asking them to observe sanctions. We sort of lightened on the sanctions under Obama's leadership. I use the term loosely. And so we poured millions into Iran's treasury. We gave them cash. We lifted sanctions. And, of course, President Obama told us, you know, it's because we have to help the Iranian people. Well, now we know the Iranian people didn't get squat, as they say. Instead, the money was sent to Syria, to rebels, to Islamists. It was also, I'm sure, used to build up their nuclear weapons pile. And now the people are in the streets. And it's pretty amazing because, you know, they were in the streets in 2009 and many of them were killed. Imprisoned. Many from that uprising are still in prison to this day. So the courage that it takes for them to be out in the streets marching right now, I think this is the fifth day, 20 people killed, is pretty amazing. And now there's a different president. President Trump is tweeting his support. Nikki Haley is verbalizing her support at the United Nations. We're going to talk about Iran today and what's going on and what we should think about it, how we might be able to help. And we'll do that with an Iranian expert, Michael Ledeen. He's been our guest before. He's a historian. His interest and experience in Iran goes back decades. And so it will be a very beneficial discussion, and I hope that you'll stay with us. Well, yesterday, another piece of news. A senator is stepping down. Clip 9.
This president hasn't even been in office for a year. And look at all the things that he's been able to get done by sheer will in many ways. And I just hope that we all get behind him every way we can, and we'll get this country turned around in ways that will benefit the whole world. But above all, benefit our people.
You know, that was just a month or so ago. Remember we played that? That was Senator Orrin Hatch praising the president. He actually said more flattering things than that. He said something like, yeah, he may be the best president we've ever had. I think he said something like that. And you will recall that President Trump went out to Utah to praise Orrin Hatch and to try to encourage him not to step down because the president fears that someone named Mitt Romney will throw his hat into the ring. Well, I think that's probably inevitable. Just saying to you, I think that's probably inevitable. Mitt Romney has tried so often. You know, he was governor of Massachusetts. It was under Mitt Romney that gay marriage was instituted in Massachusetts. And sometime I'll tell you the longer story of that. He claimed he was against it, but I know that behind the scenes he was expediting it. I'm not a fan of Mitt Romney's, but I'm not a fan of Orrin Hatch either. So I'm an equal opportunity, unfan of both of the gentlemen from Utah. I don't know what kind of a senator Mitt Romney would be. I'm sure he would be good on some things, but bad on others. I think probably my biggest problem with both of them is their judgment is so uneven, so unreliable. Mr. Hatch, Senator Hatch, you know, he's 83. I think he's been in Congress. He's the oldest senator serving, or the longest senator serving in the Senate right now. He's been there too long. And when I've interacted with him, it's just obvious he has Senate fever, whatever you want to call that, however you want to describe it. These guys serve too long. They're insulated. They're pompous, arrogant, and they're in another world that does not serve the American people. So it's a good thing to get new blood in that race. I wish it were not Mitt Romney. And let's see what happens. We'll find out, I'm sure, in the next few days. But I guarantee you I would be shocked if former Governor Mitt Romney did not throw his hat in the ring ASAP. So just stay tuned on that one. Well, there's a lot to say about what's going on with the Russian Trump investigation, all things related to that, Hillary Clinton's email and all that. Catherine Herridge gave a report last night. Then I have several things I want to update you on. Here's Catherine.
Newly released emails show Clinton aide Huma Abedin sent security passwords for sensitive government networks to her unsecured Yahoo account. In a tweet, President Trump unloaded on Abedin, alleging she disregarded basic security, put classified passwords at risk, and he suggested she should be jailed, then once again criticized what he calls the Deep State Justice Department, imploring officials to finally act against Abedin, former FBI Director Comey, and others. The White House press secretary explained.
Obviously, the facts of that case are very disturbing, and I think the president wants to make clear that he doesn't feel that anyone should be above the law.
April 2016 FBI interview overseen by demoted agent Peter Strzok, who sent anti-Trump text messages, Abedin admitted she routinely forwarded government emails to her Yahoo account for printing. The Abedin emails found on her estranged husband Anthony Weiner's computer are significant because they led the FBI to reopen the criminal investigation 10 days before the election.
I think it's really hard for civilians to understand what a serious breach of national security Huma Abedin perpetrated and Hillary Clinton above her. I think it's hard for people to understand. Maybe the reference that President Trump made to what happened to U.S. Navy sailor Christian Saucier would help, because Christian was newly married and he was on a naval ship and he took pictures of the, I think, controls and things like that, equipment. Because he was so excited to be there, he was still wrong. You know, you're not supposed to do this. So he sent these pictures to his family to show them what he was doing. And it was classified, you see, classified information that you're not supposed to send, certainly through your phone or whatever device, computer. And so a Christian's penalty, that just the sailor who took pictures on a submarine, he was put in jail, in the brig, as it were. He was booted out of the Navy. He lost all of his pension and benefits, and plus the black mark of being, I don't know if they call it court-martialed in the Navy, but he was booted out. So it gives you an idea. Trust me, a lot of people are in jail because they breached these security rules and boundaries. But Mrs. Clinton, not so much. Huma, nothing. Cheryl Mills, nothing. Nothing. In fact, that brings me to this next story I want to read to you. This is from The Hill. And this is not a new story. It was out. It came out a few days ago. But excuse me, but all of us were vacationing, so at least not really paying attention. And this has to be paid attention to. We'll put this on our Facebook page. It's called Congressional Investigators Find Irregularities in FBI's Handling of Clinton Email Case. So here we go. Republican and key congressional committees say they have uncovered new irregularities and contradictions inside the FBI's probe of Hillary Clinton's email server. So they now have written evidence that the FBI believed there was evidence that some laws were broken when the former Secretary of State and her top aides transmitted classified information. So now they have it in writing that the FBI knew they were breaking, these people were breaking the law. The evidence includes passages in FBI documents stating, quote, the sheer volume of classified information that flowed through Clinton's insecure emails was proof of criminality, as well as admission of false statements by one key witness in the case. Now stay with me, because this is really amazing. All of this came out after Andrew McCabe spent 7 hours being interviewed by the committee. And so we're just now hearing some of the things they learned behind closed doors. So the FBI did not prosecute, did not even put Mrs. Clinton under oath. And they wrote their exonerating statement on her that was read by Comey, that they were not going to bring charges. They wrote the statement, of course, before they had tons of evidence, and I'll get into that. So one key witness, it says, admitted to false statement. Who was that key witness? Well, the name was redacted, but it was an employee of the computer firm that helped maintain Mrs. Clinton's personal server. He admitted, well, earlier with the FBI, he said he had not scrubbed those emails. He hadn't done anything to it. And then he claims he had an obscenity moment that I can't say. And then he just happened to remember that he actually used bleach bit and destroyed all of her email. So that was the little lie that the employee of the computer firm told. He lied under oath, but they did nothing to him. They gave him immunity. So the FBI began drafting a statement exonerating Mrs. Clinton of any crimes while evidence responsive to subpoenas was still outstanding. And before agents had interviewed more than a dozen key witnesses, and that included that computer firm guy who said he actually bleach-bitted all of her information. So they decided she'd done nothing before. Remember they said there was no motive? They couldn't establish a motive? So then FBI Deputy Director McCabe said that a bureau official confirmed that the investigation and charging decisions were controlled by a small group in Washington headquarters rather than the normal process of allowing field offices to investigate possible criminality. So in other words, the FBI's usual pattern is that this particular crime took place in New York. That's where her private server was, in her bathroom. Usually the protocol would be the FBI in New York would be doing the investigating, and then they would recommend whatever charges or whatever they would recommend back to Washington. But not so. The Washington field office decided they would control everything so that the New York crew was cut out of it. So some Republicans on this committee said the findings and revelations have left them more convinced than ever that the FBI leadership rigged the outcome to clear Mrs. Clinton. Congressman Getz said he has growing questions about the role the Obama Justice Department played in the case. Getz said his panel has evidence that the FBI took actions while writing the exoneration statement that required justice input, such as immunizing witnesses in June of 2016. And, of course, we all know, and those witnesses were like Cheryl Mills and Huma Abedin, they got immunity. So did this computer guy who lied under oath. And the FBI said it was because they thought they would get more information. This is what the standard, the official blustering line is, because they thought they would get more information from them if they gave them immunity. Well, not so much. Maybe they did, but we certainly never heard anything, did we? And so Mrs. Clinton was exonerated. The language was changed. Remember in Comey's, in his original draft, it said grossly negligent. She was grossly negligent, which has criminal penalties. And he changed it to extremely careless so that there was nothing criminal to charge her with. There are other things. In this draft that was dated 2016, they said that there was a large amount, the FBI said in this draft, there was a large amount of highly classified information, 8 top secret passages and 37 secret passages, which suggested criminality. And I could read you their exact words, but I'm running out of time here. And I want you to read this article. Again, we'll put it on our Facebook page. The admission, by the way, of this computer gentleman who bleach-bitted Mrs. Clinton's email. His admission of false statements came one day after the Comey statement was already being drafted. The computer employee originally told the FBI that he did not recall making any deletions from Clinton's server in March 2015. Lying to the FBI is a federal felony, but the FBI decided not to pursue criminal charges against the witness and instead gave the technician immunity. And on we could go. In fact, there were at least a dozen interviews that were connected after that draft was exonerating Mrs. Clinton was formed, and that included some key officials. People had information about it on the front lines. There's so much more. Heather Samuelson was another official. I remember they gave them their laptops back, didn't really look at them. You know, I guess that's fair treatment, right? So there's more to this article. I wish I had time to read the whole thing to you, but it's in The Hill, which is no Trump fan. The Hill is a pretty liberal paper, but it's congressional investigators find irregularities in FBI's handling of Clinton email case. Back in a second with Michael Ledeen.
Hey, here's some great news, and we could all use some great news for 2018. If you're worried about your healthcare costs or you feel like you're missing out because open enrollment is over, well, it's not too late to join MediShare. You can sign up anytime, and think about this. The typical savings for a family with MediShare is about $500 a month. Think what a difference that would make to your budget. Again, that $500 a month is the typical savings. It could be more or less for you. Definitely worth taking a couple minutes to find out. There are over 300,000 MediShare members sharing each other's medical bills, and something they're now loving, MediShare has a telehealth program that lets you log in and meet with a doctor in real time within the comfort of your own home. For everything from a cold or flu or for a prescription, you can save a lot of time and money, and it's free. Again, open enrollment might be over, but you can still join MediShare. Here's the number to find out more, 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, 855-PSALM-23.
I have a friend who spent landscaping his yard. He had this scrawny little tree that didn't fit into his plan. Not only was it scrawny, it was ugly. Only had two leaves on it. So one night before dinner, my friend decided to yank it out of the soil. He spent the whole weekend getting that tree out of his yard. Stevie said, "I've never seen such a little, ugly, scrawny bush have such deep and strong roots." That's true with Christians. We're little, sometimes ugly, always weak, but our roots go down deep into God. And you can't get rid of us. Deal with it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu. Today.
If you are a white heterosexual boy whose parents are still married and can afford to send you to summer camp, then you may be privileged. That's according to a privilege test administered to Wisconsin eighth graders at Badger Middle School. Kids were grilled on a range of topics from sexuality and race to religion and economics. They were asked to reveal whether their parents could afford a therapist and whether they've tried to hide their sexuality. The school district said teachers wanted to spark a conversation on privilege. Instead, it sparked outrage from parents. How about teaching kids that with hard work and determination, they can be whatever they want in life? The privilege test is a classic example of public school indoctrination. They want the children to believe there's something wrong with white, heterosexual, middle-class boys. That's not privilege. That's discrimination. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The White House's call to defend the Iranian people's right to self-determination is taking shape on air and online, with President Trump himself firing a cannonade of tweets that noted the uprising, his support of the Iranian people, and he accused the Obama administration of stabilizing the Tehran regime with $1.7 billion in cash in a settlement of a decades-old dispute back in 2016. All of the money that President Obama foolishly gave them went into terrorism and into their pockets. The people have little food, big inflation, and no human rights. Vice President Mike Pence added, "The United States of America will not repeat the shameful mistake of our past." That, a reference to a similar Iranian revolt back in 2009, sparked by the country's disputed presidential election and President Obama's wait-and-see attitude.
My hope is that the regime responds not with violence, but with a recognition that the universal principles of peaceful expression and democracy are ones that should be affirmed. Am I optimistic that that will happen? You know, I take a wait-and-see approach.
An approach seen by the current administration as grievously ineffective.
The people of Iran are crying out for freedom. All freedom-loving people must stand with their cause. The international community made the mistake of failing to do that in 2009. We must not make that mistake again.
Ambassador Haley, very strong there today. Brett, she said the U.S. would seek an emergency session at the U.N. to express support of the people there in Iran. Obviously, that is a position supported by the Trump White House.
That was Kevin Cork on Fox News yesterday. Sandy Rios back with you. The thing that no one is saying, for some reason, remember the famous Arab Spring? You know, President Obama was all over the Arab Spring. He was so excited about it. And he helped overthrow Gaddafi in Libya. He helped overthrow Mubarak in Egypt and instate the Muslim Brotherhood, very actively involved. But in Iran, where the people actually wanted freedom and were opposing the Islamists, not so much. He just took a wait-and-see attitude. The contrast was stark. People in the streets in 2009 were killed. They were imprisoned. Many remain in prison right now. So what is this new uprising all about? Why now? Who is it? And what are their chances? I've asked Dr. Michael Ladina to join us this morning. Michael is the Freedom Scholar at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. His expertise is, among other things, Iran, Iraq, terrorism, international security. He has consulted the National Security Council, the State Department, the Defense Department. He's been a special advisor to the Secretary of State. He has authored more than 35 books, including Field of Fight, How to Win the War Against Radical Islam and Its Allies, co-authored by General Michael Flynn, and also Accomplice to Evil, Iran and the War Against the West, the War Against the Terror Masters, the Iranian Time Bomb, and on it goes. You can see that Michael knows a lot about the country of Iran and joins us this morning. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Sandy.
Hey, it's nice to have your expertise. I really appreciate it. Okay, I want to know, let's just start with some big questions. If you were to contrast the beginnings of the 2009 uprising and the one now, how do they compare?
There are two big differences. One is geographic and the other is demographic. Geographically, in 2009, the protests were primarily in Tehran. And it was a lot of people, but they were all in one city. And so the security forces could target them and try to control the streets of one place. Today, the last count I heard was 31 cities. And it covers the whole expanse of Iran, which is a big country, which has a population of, 80, 85 million people, something like that. Big place.
Wow.
Very hard to bring that under control. Secondly, the demonstrators in 2001 were primarily middle and above, middle class and above. And so they were rather easily intimidated, and threats at them had real meaning. They had a lot to lose. These people today are workers and unemployed, and they're much more difficult to gull, and they're much more difficult to bring under control because they have so little to lose. Mm-hmm. And so they are now bound and determined to bring down this regime. There's an error that a lot of people are making, which is that to say that since these are poor people, these are in many ways Marxist proletariat. It's funny to see it happening in a third world country. But people make the mistake of saying, well, they were demonstrating because of economic reasons. And if the economy improves and so forth, the stuff will go away. It won't go away. Because what they're rebelling against is a system that produces misery. And the Islamic Republic has produced misery for the overwhelming majority of the Iranian people. And we're probably at 80, 85, 90% of the people are fed up with the regime and want it gone. And they couldn't be more explicit in what they want. They want an end to the Islamic Republic. They don't want to be pushed around and governed by clerics. They want to be free.
You know, I think that bears repeating, Michael, because everywhere we turn, Fox included, we are told repeatedly this is about the economy, it's about the high unemployment rate. And I'm sure that's contributing. I don't think there's probably any doubt about that, that the money that we poured into Iran under Barack Obama went elsewhere, did not go to the people. That's a factor. But the fact that it is a rebellion against religious oppression by the Ayatollahs. I mean, how do you measure, though, how do you measure the differences? I mean, is it blatantly anti the Ayatollahs? And how are we seeing that? How would we know that?
They say it. They chant it. They say death to Khamenei, death to the clerics. We don't want an Islamic Republic. They're not chanting, give us our money. This is not the Marie Antoinette version of revolution. These people want an end to the system. They want it gone. They want to govern themselves.
I read that in 2009, a lot of the uprising by, as you described, the middle and upper classes was against the election of Ahmadinejad.
Yes.
And now Rouhani is the president. And it's really interesting to watch his response. He's basically saying, you know, what the mayor of Baltimore said, give the room to protest, you know, let them do it. They have a right. And it's not just one message. He seems to continually be sending that message out that it's let them express themselves. How do you see that? What does that mean exactly?
Well, he's trying to buy them off. He's trying to get them to go home, get out of the streets and go home. But they're not going to fall for it. I mean, they know him. He's the president under whom. He's the successor to Ahmadinejad, right, Sandy, who was portrayed as a monster.
Yeah.
Well, the execution rate in Iran is up 50% under Rouhani.
Wow.
The people know that. So he's not fooling anybody. And he's the one who sent all these troops into Syria and Lebanon and Iraq and Yemen that people are screaming about. And they say, don't talk to us about Gaza. Talk to us about Iran.
I was just reading this morning, Fox is reporting that there are some leaked meeting notes coming out of the upper levels of leadership. I don't know if it's the clerics or if it's Rouhani or both. But basically, they're saying, God help us. And I'll read this. The report says, religious leaders and the leadership must come to the scene as soon as possible and prevent the situation from deteriorating further. God help us. This is a very complex situation and is very different from previous occasions. And let me repeat, that's a leaked memo out of a meeting in the leadership of Iran. That's pretty, I mean, that's amazing, isn't it, Michael? You would think that they had so much power because of the money that's been sent to them that they wouldn't be worried.
No, but it's one thing. It's one thing to have enough forces of repression to be able to put down a lot of people, to be sure, but people in one city, in Tehran. It's another thing altogether to have to deal with demonstrations in big cities, small towns, and villages. in the countryside, which is what they're facing right now. This is a big deal.
You know, one of the ways, of course, that information has gotten out has been through social media. I was just reading about this. I guess he's a young journalist. His name is Roshal Azam, and he is the key person who set up something on what's called the Telegram app, which, as I understand it, is the thing most favored by, especially by younger people in Iran. Yeah. Millions of them are on this, and that's how they share video and information, rally day. But that's been removed. I mean, that's been censored. So yeah. I don't know what the update is on that, Michael, but how in the world can they continue their uprising if they can't get the word out?
They continue their uprising because they're communicating mostly by courier, by messenger. It's funny, as the world gets more modern and digital communications take over, we go back to the oldest forms of communication, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, you've seen, you have watched, I know that you're watching this and that you have contacts inside the country. You're watching Trump's response. He said some really good things. So has Nikki Haley at the, and so has Mike Pence, who was a real champion on behalf of the Iranian people when he was in Congress. But is there something practical you think the Trump administration could do, Michael, to actually help the protesters?
Many things. If there's a technological fix for the censorship, if we can lift the blockage of social media, we should do that right away. I'm not sure there is such a technological fix, but if we have people capable of doing that, we should do it. If it means sabotaging a building in downtown Tehran, where all of this censorship and repression are concentrated, then we should absolutely go after that. And then we have to act on behalf of the Iranian people. We have to go to the UN. It's very good that Haley's going to the UN for an emergency session to demand that people put down the Islamic Republic for what they're doing to their own people. And you can be sure that countries like China, Russia, North Korea, and so forth are going to vote against any such effort. And that will help clarify the situation even more for the Iranian people. And then finally, it's time to purge our own bureaucrats here in places like Voice of America and Radio Farda, and get some good, aggressive, pro-American, pro-freedom people on the air from here into Iran as best we can.
Well, we need to stop and explain, because I don't think I've even discussed this on the air, Michael, but the Voice of America, like everything else under the Obama 8 years, was overtaken by leftists. And they're still in place. That's what you're saying, right? They're still there. They're sending messages out to the world that are anti-American and not pro-democracy. Is that an overstatement?
No, that's correct. And it's not just Obama. I mean, Obama made things worse, to be sure. But even under Bush, VOA is largely taken over by anti-American Iranian immigrants.
Michael, I want to ask you a few more questions to go back into the history of Iran just a little bit. But that would mean I'd need to keep you for 5 minutes past our original time. Can you stay with me just a little bit longer?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, we'll go 5 minutes past our time. All right, so you have contacts inside the country, and I already mentioned that there are people that are still in jail from the 2009 uprising. What kind of treatment, what do you know about who those people are and what might be happening to them?
Well, the most famous ones were the leaders of the Green Party, who actually won the elections of 2009. It was then stolen from them. That's Mousavi and Karoubi. And they have been under house arrest ever since. And a lot of their followers are in prison. So all the top people from the Green Movement of that time are locked up.
My understanding, I've heard it said, that this new movement doesn't really have good leadership. Would you agree with that?
No, I think it has brilliant leadership, if you look at the way they're behaving. It's just that people over here, the experts on Iran, don't know who the leaders are. So that's when they said they have no leadership. They said that last time. They said there's no Green Party, and then it rose. CIA has been saying for 38 years that the opposition in Iran has no leaders. They've been wrong always.
Well, which leads me to John Brennan, former CIA director, and his tweet about this. What does he say?
Isn't that disgusting?
Yeah, he says, with wholesale condemnation of Iran and nuclear deal over past year, Trump administration squandered opportunity to bolster reformists in Tehran and prospects for peaceful political reform in Iran. Bluster is neither a strategy nor a mechanism for exercise of U.S. power and influence. That from former CIA Director John Brennan. Your response to that, Michael Ledeen?
Is give him an F for complete failure to understand the nature of Iran and what's going on there. Hopeless. Totally misguided. There are no moderates in the regime, so there's nobody to work with to moderate the way things are done. And there aren't going to be any. The regime is, it reminds me of the old debate about communism. There is no human face to communism. You can't have it. So either you've got the system or you don't. And if you've got it, then there's not going to be any freedom. And if you don't, well, maybe there's hope. And that's the way it is with radical Islamic tyranny.
You know, I think the thing that bothers or worries me, Michael, is that we watched this same thing happen in Venezuela in the last 2 years, 3 years, however the timeline. We saw the people uprise and get out in the streets and give their hearts, really, to trying to overthrow Hugo Chavez and then his Maduro after that. And then what happened was that they starved them. They just got more and more hungry. They can't find jobs. The brutality and violence in the country is so great that really, I think they've been starved from their voices. I just don't even think they have the will to, they have the ability to fight anymore. That's what I fear for the people in the streets of Iran, and I'd love to know what you think about that.
Well, I don't know how it's going to turn out. Well, we will have to see. So far, so good. They have the right objectives. They seem to come from the right part of society for a movement of this sort. They totally understand what they are up against, and they're fighting very hard, and they're very clever. When they, you know, they have a sense of humor in all this. When they capture some butcher from the Revolutionary Guards, they take his pants off and set him free. So that's pretty good. Instead of beating him up or hanging him or things like that. So it's an effective movement, and when it's all over, I think we'll find that there are leaders and that they're very smart about these things.
In just a few minutes, and this is an impossible question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I have always wondered why President Obama was so committed to the Iranian leadership, to the Shiite leadership of Iran. He seemed to be very cozy with the Muslim Brotherhood, which is Sunni. Can you unlock that mystery in 2 minutes? Is that possible?
Well, I've been asked that question for years. Why is Obama so passionate about an alliance with Iran, which he wanted before he was elected even? So he came in wanting it, and then he pursued it for 8 years, and as we know, he failed, thank God. Well, the simple, short explanation is he's a radical leftist, and his whole administration was devoted to reversing enemies and turning them into friends. So you got Cuba, you got Venezuela, you got Russia, you got China, you got North Korea, where he was constantly trying to make alliances with our former enemies, and Iran is one more of those. So you can explain it that way. But there seems to me, to Obama, to be a real passion to the alliance with Iran, and I think he pursued it way beyond the bounds of rational policy designed to invert our alliance structure, which is what the standard explanation has it So I think there's still a mystery about Obama. I would like to know why, just as you would. And I would like to, I'm not sure we're ever going to find out why.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It won't matter, I suppose, but it would sure be interesting to know. And by the way, Michael's most current article is the first anti-American president, and you might guess it is Barack Obama. It's an article about President Obama and about Iran, and it's published by PJ Media. We'll put it on our Facebook page so that you can read and share it. Michael Ledeen, thank you so much, Michael, always for your expertise. We value your input. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sandy.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Bye.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning. There's lots more, as you might imagine, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. One company's employees were absent from the fast food worker-driven fight for a $15 minimum wage. That company? In-N-Out Burger. In-N-Out starts their employees at $10.50 an hour and allows them to earn as much as $120,000 annually. That's the highest of any fast food chain in the country. They also provide vision, medical, and dental benefits. Needless to say, they have very low turnover. Merit-based pay always produces a better product, greater service, and more productive employees. Did I mention this is a Christian-based company?
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hey family, this is Lauren from Living Life with Lauren, and I want you to know just how much I appreciate you, and I count it an honor and a privilege to bring you interviews weekly with godly speakers, teachers, and authors that point us all to a closer walk with Jesus. Thank you for listening, telling your friends, downloading our podcast, and of course, connecting with me on Facebook, Living Life with Lauren, and Lauren Kitchen Stewart. I would love to hear from you. We're heard every Saturday evening at 8 Central Time on American Family Radio. Join us.
Hello, friend. I'm Pastor Ron Jones, and I'm glad to tell you something good has come to American Family Radio. Something Good is a daily half-hour Bible teaching program that I'm hosting at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. In a world full of so much bad news, we're glad to bring you something good. Learn more at somethinggoodradio.org. That's somethinggoodradio.org.
Dr. Ligon Duncan from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
The Bible is inspired because its nature is the self-revelation of God. In other words, the authority of the Bible is the authority of God. Behind your doctrine of Scripture is a doctrine of God. The product of Scripture is the activity of God. The Scripture is the product of God, the Holy Spirit, which is why God the Holy Spirit uses it in conversion and in sanctification. So what we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source. And because we believe God to be the author of the Bible, we talk about the quality of the Bible as inspired or God-breathed.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The ongoing and proliferating anti-regime demonstrations in Iran reflect the fact that many in that country, especially among its sizable majority of young people, have had it with the mullahs. They find particularly infuriating the fact that the so-called supreme leader and his cronies have become fabulously wealthy while millions of ordinary Iranians are facing severe privation. Consequently, the Trump administration could help fan the flame of internal opposition to the mullahocracy by disseminating what it knows about the offshore bank accounts, investments, and money laundering operations the Iranian ruling elites use to stash and enlarge their ill-gotten assets. Incredibly, the Department of Justice is reportedly claiming that they can't release this data. If new statutory authority is needed, Congress should promptly provide it. It's time to name and shame those Iranians who threaten their own people and ours alike. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
In Pakistan, anti-American, anti-Trump demonstrations. An emergency government meeting and summoning the U.S. ambassador in response to President Trump's tweet claiming the United States has given Pakistan $33 billion and received in exchange nothing but lies and deceit. The Pakistani government says the president's tweet is, quote, completely incomprehensible as they contradicted facts manifestly. Pakistan says it is deeply disappointed in the president's tweet. The Trump administration says it, too, is frustrated with the relationship.
Pakistan has played a double game for years. They work with us at times. And they also harbor the terrorists that attack our troops in Afghanistan.
In August, President Trump argued the same points while he detailed his administration's strategy for the region. This week, the administration confirmed it still refuses to send $255 million in aid to Pakistan. A former Trump State Department official says this posture towards Pakistan is overdue.
We can also politically, I think, just make it clear that we're shifting away from this government and going to look more toward India as a solution to our problems.
Pakistan's government says it has sacrificed tens of thousands of lives fighting terrorism, and that, quote, could not be trivialized so heartlessly by pushing all of it behind a monetary value, and that, too, an imagined one. This relationship continues fluctuating. In October, President Trump said Pakistan was respecting the U.S. again, praising its cooperation in freeing an American and Canadian couple held there. Pakistan is also the primary U.S. land supply route into Afghanistan. Pakistan has previously blocked that route, forcing the U.S. to use other Central Asian countries to supply its forces in Afghanistan.
Rich Edson of Fox News. Sandy Rios back with you. Well, does that not make sense to you? Does it not make sense that when the U.N. votes overwhelmingly, like only nine people did not join a resolution condemning the United States for moving our embassy to Jerusalem, that we withdrew the next day $300 million of our support for the U.N.? We furnish the building. We built the building. We pay for the diplomats. We pay an inordinate percentage of the cost of the UN. And they come and party in our country and luxuriate and boast of their importance when they go back home. And yet we foot the bill. And it is nonsense. And so we've been saying this for years. The UN propagates some of the most horrible things in the entire world. Terrible. And they have been doing it for decades. So President Trump is like drying the well up. Good for him. Same thing with all of our enemies. We've been pumping money into our enemies all of these years. We've given North Korea a ton of money, buying them off now for decades. We did that under the Bush administration. If we just pay them more money, you know, they'll get nice. And this has been, you know, our foreign policy plan for decades. Under the leftists, and I would include, in regard to foreign policy, I would include George Bush Sr., just really completely, to me, divorced from common sense. This is why regular people like you and me are important to serve in government, because people that have had money and been raised just thinking ethereal thoughts and not having practical application of common sense lose their common sense. And that's why so many of them are in the Senate now, in the House, and that's why they make such horrible decisions. But I digress. So the president, you know, has somehow not escaped. He's not lost his common sense. So he wants to dry up the well on Pakistan. No. Yeah, you know, they're not going to help us. They're undermining us. They're playing a double game. As Nikki Haley just said, we're not going to give them millions of dollars. Just not going to do it. And I think you can look to see that repeated in countries around the world. And why wouldn't we do that? You know, you have to understand, too, under Mrs. Clinton as Secretary of State, did you know that foreign aid was tied to whether a country embraced gay marriage and homosexual rights? They didn't. If they didn't adhere to transgender rights, LGBT rights, nope, you're not getting any money. That was the moral foundation upon which we did business. And so now this president is just, it seems to be, his moral compass is that if they are undermining us and they are really not our friends at all, why are we giving them money? And I concur with that. And so that's what's happening. It's a very dangerous world. We know that. By the way, yesterday it was reported that, here's the headline from The Hill. Trump, I have a much bigger button than Kim Jong-un. All right, so it was reported derisively that he tweeted. Of course, they love to mock his tweets, and I think a lot of people are affected by that. And yes, some of his tweets are over the line. I think many of us are just so grateful that their political correctness does not restrain the president, because we have been clamped down so for too long in this country, not being able to say what we think. Not that you should always say what you think. I'm not advocating for that. Certainly as Christians, we must measure our thoughts, make sure that our words are grace-filled. But this is a president who we don't know his spiritual condition. I think he's changed a lot, but it's not like he's, you know, deeply rooted in Christian tradition. So he's just being, you know, an American male, doing what the unleashed American male does. He's saying what he thinks. And that used to be refreshing. So I find in some ways it is. But back to his tweet on Korea. This is what he said. You remember that Kim Jong-un boasted that he had a button, a nuclear button on his desk, and he could hit many American cities at will with his nuclear power. So this is what the president tweeted back. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un just stated that the, quote, nuclear button is on his desk at all times, end quote. Will someone from his depleted and food-starved regime please inform him that I too have a nuclear button, but it is much bigger and more powerful than the one he has, and my button works. So that's what he tweeted. I don't have a problem with that. Yeah, that's probably why I'm not Secretary of State and never will be. But I don't have a problem with that, and I kind of think when you're dealing with a madman like Kim Jong-un, wicked, bad, out of control, that these scary kinds of unpredictable things from our president are probably the only thing intimidating him. I could be wrong. Maybe it'll provoke him, too. We don't know, but we've tried the diplomatic approach. We've tried it for decades, and it has not worked with North Korea. So let's see what this approach does. Speaking of political correctness, man, a politician, she is the... She's a top lawmaker from the party known as Alternative for Germany, which is the one that's trying to fight immigration, certainly Muslim migration in their country. She was blocked from Twitter and Facebook on Monday after slamming the Cologne police for sending a New Year's tweet in Arabic. This is what she said. What the blank is happening in this country? Why is an official police site tweeting in Arabic? Do you think it is to appease the barbaric gang-raping hordes of Muslim men? Her name is Beatrix von Storch. So what happened to her? She was yanked off of Twitter. She was yanked off of Facebook. Now she's being pursued by the police in Germany for criminal complaints because they had this censorship law that went into effect January the 1st. And now I'm telling you, this is a portent of things to come here if we don't do something about it. There's an international move, which I've told you many, many times, that's, you know, under the guise of hate speech, that it's trying to stop, censor any kind of speech that does not reflect the view of the left on any of these things. And Germany is on the cutting edge, boy, of doing this. And so this lawmaker now will probably likely face charges. It's not the first time it's happened. It's happened to, you know, we just had a woman from Austria. Remember a couple of weeks ago I interviewed her and she talked about the rape in Vienna. She talked about the fact that they're moving Islamic immigrants into these housing areas that where wealthy people, her husband's a doctor, they're moving them in next door, and the rapes have gone up. They have pretty much shut down the crystal, I can't say it in Austrian, but the Christmas fairs that they have. It's just everything is changing, and she's not allowed to say that because now she's under surveillance and has been charged also. Then I just read 2 days ago that in Germany, maybe it was 3 days ago, that animal brothels are popping up because of the practices of Middle Eastern men. Animal brothels, just think about that for a second. But this woman, who's a lawmaker, can't tweet that she's wondering what's happening to her country. She's not allowed to do that. That's criminal. And so this is what's happening in Europe. They are becoming out of their minds, and the people that try to speak up are being punished. And that's what we don't want to happen here. And that's why no matter how offensive the speech, and I'm not talking about, there are limits to what we can say. Like we can't yell fire in a theater, and we certainly, I don't think, want a country where people are profane all the time, which they are, by the way, every movie, even the politicians. I'm not in favor of that. But freedom of expression on political ideas. That was the idea of our First Amendment. The ability to express your faith, the ability to express criticism of your government. Those are standard hallmarks worthy of fighting for in this country. So tweet on, President Trump. We don't want to be like Germany or Sweden or France. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.